I think we should, just flip it on Mike, and since it's, if you're truly kicking it in the head at 100 episodes, Mike, I think that your listeners that have been with you for this whole trip really need to know more about you. I was being distracted. What's that?
Is that Janet?
No.
It's Angie.
Oh.
Distracting me.
I don't know. Do I know Angie?
No.
We have friends that listen to this.
You have friends?
We have friends.
Oh, okay. Hey, so anyway.
And we know a lot of the same people.
I think we do.
That's the funny thing is because like I knew who you were for like a couple of years. And like I said, I have a picture. You and me are in a picture from like Halloween, like 5 years ago. So I wanted to get you guys back on here to talk about stuff that we didn't cover the last time or you know, stuff that maybe you wanted to talk about. I said I was going to put you guys in charge, put you guys in the driver's seat. Yeah, I'm getting off the train, man. This train took off in early 2016. I had two co-hosts at the time, and we decided we were going to do seasons rather than have one of those year-round podcasts that, like, every week, I don't have that kind of discipline for a podcast, especially when I found out so early that our audience wasn't that big. Luckily, we've had some great conversations, but after a certain point, we're like, okay, we should just do 100 episodes and just, like, disappear. It's funny, man, because I've had like as much time post-pandemic with this show as we did before. Like the shutdown came like right in the middle of the whole run.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done that many shows. Like it was like kind of like the 50th or the 51st show was like the first show under lockdown, I think.
Did you find it when they did lockdown? Did you find it easier to get people on? Did you find it easier to contact people and schedule?
Yes and no, because like some of my biggest guests happened the year before the shutdowns or 2 years before. It's like an ebb and flow of like nobody or really good guests or there's just like nobody where it's just me and Pat talking. And Pat was my, my other co-host, and he kind of dropped off at the very beginning of the last season, which is this. But yeah, I want to put you guys in charge. You guys lead the way because you know you guys have stories that I can't even imagine, I'm sure. And I feel like we scratched the surface the last time. We barely scratched the surface the last time.
Well, is there anything specific that you'd like to know about Mike or anything that we can
I wanted to hear more UK stories. I want to hear stuff about I guess we've had a lot of horror stories about playing in bands in the local watering hole. I don't know how interesting that would be, but and more shows that you guys went to, man, because I know we always talked about the Queen Mott the Hoople show, man, which is like legendary in itself, man. But having grown up the way you guys did in the 70s, man, at a time where any given month at Madison Square Garden where there were easily 8 or 9 shows.
Well, it was a great show. And I was just talking to somebody about this the other day. It was pretty funny. I remember my friend Jimmy calls me up and goes, "Oh, I got tickets to see Judas Priest and Metallica," right? This is at the time at the, I think Jakey Lee was playing guitar for Ozzy, who's one of my favorite guitar players. And also Cliff Burton was playing bass for Metallica. So anyway, we go to the Meadowlands and we see Metallica kicked ass. I mean, it was great. But then Ozzy comes out and, Ozzy's Ozzy. But what happened is they started somebody ripped the foam out of one of the seats and threw it on stage.
Yeah.
So So Ozzy, just like in a half daze, picks it up and throws it back into the audience. Almost immediately, everybody in the whole place ripped the seats up and threw it on stage. And I think they did like thousands of dollars worth of damage. It was really funny. I mean, it's like it was snowing in there.
That was a trend, man. That was a trend. I was at that show. I was at the when Metallica opened for Ozzy.
Yep.
And it was right in the middle of the trend, man. The Ultimate Sin Tour and Metallica were touring Master of Puppets.
Yep, that was it. It was great.
I did and a couple of years earlier, man, I did an article for Legs McNeil a couple of years back about that trend when it first happened at the Priest concert at the Garden, and they got banned from the Garden for doing, like, I don't know, it was like how many hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of damage, where they got new seats. And then if you went to a metal concert anytime in between 84 and 87, man, the destruction was more and more and more each time. So it became a thing of like tearing up the foam out of your seats and throwing it all over the place, man.
That was so crazy. That was nuts. I mean, we were laughing. I mean, it looked like, you know, it was freaking snowing in there. I didn't know that it was a trend because, that was the first time and the last time I've ever seen that, you know? So it was pretty cool.
It happened at Priest. It happened at Metallica and Ozzy. It happened at, and the worst one, man, as late as 87, the Somewhere in Time tour, Iron Maiden. I don't remember who the opening act was. And to this day, man, I can't remember the opening act because I think I missed the opening act. But anyway, that night, not only did they tear the fucking seats apart, but they, outside in the parking lot, cars were blowing up. They were setting cars on fire.
Oh, get out of here. That's
and nuts. Remember the footbridge that used to connect, that used to go over Route 3? And it used to connect the Giant Stadium lot from the Meadowlands Arena lot.
Yeah.
There was the Brennan Byrne at the time. And there used to be that wooden footbridge that you have to walk over. Like if you parked on the far side, they stomped the walls out. Like they punched the walls out. Like they were made of like aluminum. And they punched the fucking walls out and they stomped the floorboards out. So there were parts where we were like walking and like you can see Route 3 below you, like the car is driving under
you. Oh, that's freaking crazy.
It was fucking crazy, man. And you're looking out and you see these fucking bonfires made of cars, man. And like it was insane, man. It was fucking insane.
That's nutty.
Yeah. There was like good old days, man.
Yep. How about you?
Yeah, I never heard of that seat. People ripping seats and tossing them. That was the first for me.
Yeah, it was like a UK football game, you know? People going nuts.
Yeah, man, that's crazy.
Remember, like, the scene in The Young Ones? Remember The Young Ones?
Oh, I love that
show. Oh, yeah.
It was one of my favorite shows ever, man. When they open up the door and it's just like there's a riot going on. Everybody's like throwing like Molotov cocktails, man, and grenades and shit. And it's all like smoky and foggy. It looked like that.
So what was the best show you ever saw, Mike?
The best show I ever saw?
Yeah, the to this day.
The best concert? Like back in the 80s or something? Or just like...
Yeah, just your entire life.
I know you guys aren't a fan of Bruce Springsteen, man. But I mean, like, I always have to cut him out to be fair to everybody else. Like, easily, like, the best 75 shows I've ever seen were Springsteen, E Street Band shows. So I don't include him. But... That's a good question, man. There's a band called Stereolab.
Yeah, I remember them. I can't place
the sound, they came out, but in the I remember early the 90s, band. Man, they came out in the early 90s, and they blew my mind every time I saw them. They were really good.
Were they signed, or is this like a local band, or what?
Yeah, no, they were signed. I think they ended up on, I don't know if it's Elektra or whatever it was, man. But I don't know what their label was because I never had them on vinyl, so I never thought about it too much. But they were out in the early 90s and early to mid 90s, and they kind of crossed over into the new decade. they lost one of their singers. She had a bike accident. I don't know. I think she like died on a bike. She had an accident, horrible accident. They had two girl singers, man, Mary Hansen and Letitia something, but they were really good. Patti Smith. What about you guys?
Yeah, I think for me, it's a small band that not a lot of people know about. There was one of my favorite bands in the 70s was a band called Bebop Deluxe.
Yeah.
And they had this guitar player who I just loved the way he played. I loved his sound, his technique. They were playing at Asbury Park. And there was a backup band called Crack the Sky out of Ohio. And went there. We had front row. Never thinking that any band could take down Bebop, you know, because I went there to see the guitar player play. Cracked Sky is an opening band. By far the best band I've ever seen in my life live.
Did you ever, I mean, were they signed? Like, did they have albums and stuff?
Yeah, I think they were on Life Songs.
I remember that band. They had a bunch of good songs, but you know what? It's been so long since I've even heard that name. You know, this is the first time I've even thinking about them probably in quite a while, Greg. But
well, you know what it is? How can you place, you know, how can you place them? That's the problem with them is they didn't fit any genre. I mean, they were put into prog rock. You know, they were
kind of weird, like Zappa too.
Exactly, yeah.
Sure, I never heard of them, man. Did you get to see them, John?
I never got to see them, but I listened to a couple of their albums. They were really, actually really good. I remember being into them, and my friends go, wow, these guys are great. I mean, besides Greg. In fact, I'm trying to remember if Greg and I were friends or if I heard from a different source about them. Because I might not have heard of them from Greg, but I knew of them. So it was pretty cool, you know?
Yeah, I don't think, you know what? I don't ever, I don't know, you know, years and years, but I never, you know, I don't remember ever talking about them to you.
No, I've never heard of them.
Yeah, the first three albums are really interesting. You know, it's dated, you know, this sounds obviously dated now. And anytime I go backwards and listen to something that I might have liked back then, the dating of the sound is really difficult for me to listen to.
Yeah,
you know, you kind of say, how, you know, there's some bands that I'll listen to now and I said, how did I even like that? And it could be because the sound is so dated.
That I have that problem more with the 80s.
Weird. You can listen to stuff from the 80s and go know exactly when it came from. We hear the with the drums, or you know, the whole Phil Collins things. Everybody was, you know, had a certain sound. Yeah,
that's my biggest problem with the Replacements, man. The Replacements, like, they're this great band. They're supposed to be this great band. I think a lot of people like them because they feel they're supposed to like them. It's the critics, you know, but it's kind of like I can't listen to them anymore because of the drum sound. Like they kind of, and that drum sound was not exclusive to metal.
Oh yeah.
You know, it was, yeah. The Phil Collins sound, I guess, right? The gated drum sound.
Yep. Yeah. The big drums. Yeah. It was, you know, it was cool at the time, but you know, it's like after a while you're like, all right, do something different.
Oh my God. Even Pleased to Meet Me. Queen in the 80s with the drum sound. Like, what was that? Up until probably 87, you know, when Guns N' Roses and King's X and bands like Faith No More and bands like that and Jane's Addiction, you know, came out, where we went back to real drum sound, that hair metal drum sound, the programming of drums, hated it. I think that's why I liked ska music in the early 80s, like the UK ska sound, because it was real instruments.
Yeah.
I think that's why I prefer the 70s in general.
Yeah. You know, even in the early 80s, Joe Jackson Elvis Costello, real musicians. You know, I dug that stuff.
Yeah, but then again, you have stuff like Def Leppard, okay? I mean, they did all that big drum and big production, but you know what? They, for some reason, to me, I think their stuff has aged well, you know? I don't know. What do you guys think? But I think overall, I like their sound, you know?
Pre-Hysteria, yes. Hysteria onward, no. I think Hysteria, like I give all the credit in the world to Rick Allen, man. That motherfucker, man. He did, like, he carried that band, man. Like the whole legacy of that band, that they carried on with him, right? Give him all the credit in the world for what he did, man. But consequently, because of what happened to him and the way he had to play the drums, I think that's what changed and compromised their sound, I think.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that, because if I go back and I hear Def Leppard from the 80s, the thing that really bothers me is the drum sound.
And I love Pyromania and High and Dry, man. They were a hard rock band, man. They kicked ass, you know? It was, it's a little bit commercial and a little bit, but I don't think it's like pussy commercial, man. It's not like the stuff that Desmond Child was writing with Bon Jovi, man, and Poison, like, not that, I don't know if he wrote with Poison, but you know what I'm talking about, like the real, when metal got real commercial and heavy with keyboards and everybody wanted to sound like Bon Jovi and everybody wanted to write with Desmond Child, like the way everybody wanted to write with Diane Warren in the 90s. You know, they all had to get that big hit song, like the E minor to C back to D chord progression, or the A minor to F to G, like that same, it's the same chord progression, but just in different keys, man. And you're a guitar player, John, so I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Everybody had to have that one hit, man. But what's my long-winded point here? But I mean, there's definitely a difference between Def Leppard pre-accident and Def Leppard post-accident with, you know, when you're with regards to Rick Allen. Again, I take nothing away from the guy, man. The guy's amazing for what he was able to do and have an entire career.
You know what I heard also, like one of the high points, because this is MTV was saying that Home Sweet Home by Motley Crue. That song, you know, was the beginning of like the power ballads that everybody went crazy with. They said that they had so many requests for that song that after that song, they put a limit on how long a song could be played in rotation, because everybody wanted to hear that song so much. I never thought it was a great song, but evidently a lot of people really, really liked it. And then after that, everybody's like, oh, we got to have a power ballad. We got to have a ballad. We got to have a ballad. Which sucked, because you know a lot of people don't want to hear ballads, but they thought that was a way to use the same formula as Crue did to become popular. So, but you know, there's a lot of instances like that where bands will do ballads, and I don't know, you know, it was just like a formula. You had your songs that kicked ass, and then your power ballad, you know. But getting back to Def Leppard, I thought they did a good job when they did like their ballady songs. They were good at it, you know, and they had a good sound. But you're right. After he lost his arm, they used a lot of what do you call it? Mechanical drums or whatever, drum samples. And it wasn't the same. But I give him credit, because the guy was a great player and he figured out how to do it.
Yeah. I give him credit too. I mean, it's absolutely all the credit in the world. I can't listen to the stuff, but you know, from, you know, a credit standpoint, got to admire what they did.
Yeah.
You know, they it would have been real easy just to let him walk away and not play and get another drummer in.
Oh, exactly. You know? It would have been super easy.
Yeah. So kudos to them for that.
Yeah. So, Mike, let me ask you a question. Here's some questions that Greg and I had about you, because we talk about you behind.
I'm not good at answering questions. Just letting you know, because I'm used to asking them.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm going to put you on a hot seat. So you wrote a few books. Tell me about your books. I mean, it sounds like they were pretty cool. You know, you got some stuff, that have rock themes.
Both of them have rock and roll music.
Mm-hmm.
Threading their way through the whole thing, man. But they're very different. Actually, no, they're very different, but I've talked about the books on this podcast a lot of times, almost ad nauseum, man. One is called Autumn and Everything After, the first one.
All right, so I don't mean to cut you off, but yeah. All right, since you've talked about them ad nauseum, what are your plans for your next book? Because I assume that you, the pen is your instrument now, and that you know, you enjoy writing, and I know that you also you know, do a lot of things connected with the English language. So what are your plans? You're gonna write another book, screenplay, lyricist?
I wish I could write a screenplay, man. Anybody? Do you know anybody that writes screenplays?
Actually, John, you and I, remember we used to hang across the highway, and there was a girl, Emily, that we would talk to, the barmaid.
Yeah.
You remember her?
No, I don't even remember the across the highway. But that doesn't mean anything, Greg. That doesn't mean I wasn't there or that I didn't talk to
you. Oh, you were, because you used to like going there and eating food. She was a playwright, and she got published, and Off Broadway picked up her play.
What place was this that we went to?
Sorry? Well, we didn't go to the play, but she was telling
not the play,
about
the
it.
Place. The place.
Oh, it was a steakhouse.
Oh, okay. All right, I got it. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's thrilling. You know what? Here's the thing. I know a lot of people who really, you know, when somebody becomes famous, they're like, oh, F them, you know, this and that. But I'm really happy to find out when somebody that we knew was successful, or they did something that was meaningful. Because you know what? If they can do it, and these are the people you hang around with, you grew up with, it's cool, because, you know, you have a chance too. I mean, so good for her. That's great.
I mean, she took that next step. You know, Mike, with books, you know, you're self-published.
We're living in the golden age of self-publishing. If this is a golden age for anything, man, it's self-publishing. That it's happening now, because of the way it's set up. We now live with print on demand, which is like wasn't an option 20 years ago or even 10 years ago, where if you're gonna self-publish something, you're not putting out $2,000, you're not putting out thousands of dollars up front, and then you end up with hundreds of books sitting in your basement that you can't get rid of. And that was the old model of self-publishing. Whereas now you don't put up any money, and it's pretty much print on demand. So if you sell 10 books, they print 10 books and they take a cut of your royalty. And that's the way it works. So, I mean, the publisher gets paid, you get paid, and, you know, it's pretty good quality. It's good quality. I can't complain about the quality of what they're putting out for me, because it's like a black matte cover.
Mm-hmm.
I could go with a glossy cover, which is a little bit, I'm happy with the paper. I'm happy with the print. I have a good designer. So the designer has nothing to do with the publisher. She's kind of independent herself. So, you know, I mean, it's a good time to do it. I mean, I don't look at it any differently than like if you have a band, or if you're a musician and you make a demo tape, or if you release an album. Never mind demo tapes. Demo tapes were like so 80s, man, when you used to carry around a cassette in your pocket and say, look, this is my band, you know. But I mean, you could cut an album in your bedroom now.
That's true. And the quality is really there.
I mean, have studio quality, man.
Yeah. If you have a a good
so on your books.
But I mean, I know, I mean, everybody I know is a writer. I mean, not everybody I know, but I mean, you know, it's, you kind of surround yourself, like you said, and hang out with people. I surround myself with artists and people who create. So everybody, most of the people I know are writers or musicians or actors or painters or something. They're always creating something.
So when you self-published, who did you give the book? I mean, obviously you must have worked with other people giving the book for a proofread. How does all that?
No,
I mean,
man.
No,
actually, I do my own editing to save money and just to save myself aggravation, because I hate editors. Like, I fucking hate, just having written with like various publications, man, and have my writing changed and have somebody, you know, it's like, basically, like, I don't handle that stuff good. So I don't like editors. I don't work well with editors. But honestly, man, if I could have somebody edit my book, I would love it. It would just to say, look, we're not editing for content. We're editing for grammar, which.
Correct. Yes.
Consequently, man, you're never done fucking editing. You're never done, especially.
Yeah,
And consequently, I have like two major fucking typos in my first book, that are, one of which is very embarrassing, because as a historian, man, out of like six revisions of the first book, I've got a major typo, man, and it's embarrassing. And it's a historical error where one key would have made the difference, one typing key. I've got Andrew Jackson's inauguration is 1929 rather than 1829. It's like a historical error of a president. But most people aren't going to catch it, but I know it. Somebody that knows history is going to know it. You're going to be like, wait a second. Andrew Jackson didn't live in the fucking 20th century, man. You know, but all those revisions, man, I didn't catch that. My designer didn't catch it. And then there's like a couple of words that are spelt wrong, but that's one of the consequences of, that's one of the negatives of self-publishing. You better have a good editor. Because if you're with a real publisher, they're going to provide the editor.
Yeah.
Right. So in the music business, John does a demo.
Right.
12 songs.
Right.
But, you know, in today's world, it's really not a demo, because the quality as such is so high quality that the demo could be released as an album.
Right.
So John has an independent record then, that now he can take.
John is his own label.
Yes. And now he can take that and he can shop to other labels to purchase that. It's already done. Same with your book. When you wrote the book, did you think about spreading that out or shopping your book?
I did that for like 20 years, man. And that's why I went independent.
Yeah, and I tell you something, Greg, you'd be surprised. I mean, there's some people that are on the internet that actually seem like they've had breakthroughs doing their own stuff, you know, without a record company. I think, who was it? Prince, among other people, was pissed off at their record company. And he was one of the first guys that said, F these crooks, and I'm going to do it myself. And he ended up making a lot of money doing that.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is the old system is dead. You know, now a lot of this music they're coming out with is I hate to say it, it's garbage. And I'm not saying it's garbage for any other reason, except they find a face, they can make anybody sound great live. You know, as long as they could dance, they don't care. They'll put the, they'll either use pre-recorded tapes like Motley Crue, or they'll, some kind of thing to make their voice sound in key. So the bottom line is they're packaging garbage. You're better off with some of the independent people that are around not doing that, you know?
It's tough to find the independent. That's the issue. It really is tough. You really got to know where to look. I mean, if I wanted to find something.
I still say you should do something with that. With your idea for, you know, putting those tickets into some sort of a commemorative.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, I really do think there's something there. You know, I think
but you could do it very easily too.
Yeah. You know, and that might be where maybe, you know, an independent, you could do that independently.
My question is always like, what are the good companies? What are the good publishers to use? Because I kind of got lucky in the sense that I had no intention of putting out a tangible product. I was just going to go the ebook route. And then I was getting somebody that was going to format the ebook, and she recommended this publisher, and she kind of informed me of what a good company to go with would be. So that's who I went with. But my question is, who else out there does what my publisher does? There has to be somebody else out there, because I do have issues. I do have personal issues with the publisher, not necessarily with their product and the quality of their product, but their customer service and the way they deal with their clients, I have some issues with. So but you have a lot of options, man. And if you decide to do that, Greg.
Yeah. You know, even with you, with first book, you ever think about turning it into an audiobook? You turn it into an audiobook.
Yeah.
You know, put it on Audible, give it away for free.
I was going to do some work for Audible, but it just became such like it's everything is time, man. That's the thing. And like I have so many involved in so many projects that I just never have the time to do it. In an audiobook, I would love to do it.
And yeah, if you gave it away for free, people, you know, that don't have to pay for it, that don't know anything about you, could effectively download it.
I have
enjoy it. And it just jumps to your next publication.
Right before Christmas, man, last year, I released a thing called The Feast. I don't know if you guys saw it or heard it, but I released it as an episode of this podcast. I released it as like, it was only 20 minutes long, but it's me reading from The Locker Notes, which is the second book, which is actually like the first book came out second, but it was written first. It's the novel. But, I read from that, man. It's just daunting, bro. You know, it's just daunting. It's just this long task. It's a lot of patience. It's a lot of like stop, pause, you know. So yeah, man, I would love to do that, but I don't know if I would necessarily be the right person to do it, you know.
So as a writer, what is your feeling towards AI? You know, which you're hearing a lot about the AI over the past couple of months, where you could go to a website, you could put in, you know, write me a song, write me a poem about Mike D podcast, going to 100 episodes. And you tell it what to do, and within seconds, it will script you out. It would script you out a song. You know, a book probably.
I don't know, man. I don't have too much of an opinion.
Have you
about
ever tried?
Because
have
I don't,
you ever
I don't
tried
know
that?
Too much about it. It's I don't know too much about AI at all, man. I know.
John, have you?
It's scary. Well,
the thing is, here's what I heard. It's kind of funny. Like, let's say you're going for a master's, so you have the subject, and you go to the AI. You go, hey, write me 8 pages, double spaced for this subject, blah blah blah. So it comes out, it'll do it, and it'll write you a brilliant paper. But what happens is, then you submit it, and then the professor goes to ChatGPT, whatever the hell it is, and he goes, "Did you write it?" And he goes, "Yes, I wrote it." So the bottom line is, if you're trying to use it to cheat, you're not going to be able to. But I heard that they're going to use it to write news articles, to write you know, just it, I don't know, it makes no sense to me. How can you get a machine to write about stuff? You know, I mean, are we are we that bad that a machine could take our place as far as in the creative realm? I think it's crazy. And I wouldn't want to see it.
Oh, it is insane. That's the scary
part about it, man. Like they're all the possibilities of all the bad shit that can go along with AI is inevitably going to happen.
You effectively,
know? Use your imagination. What some of the horrible shit that can happen?
Yeah, effectively, John or I, while we're on this podcast, could go over to that website, and we can put a couple of things about you, about your writing, about your past, music past, writing past, and it will script whatever we want.
We can conceivably have videos of each other doing shit that we never did in places that we never were.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it's going to get to the point where, oh, that's not me. That's AI. I'm sorry. That wasn't me. So, you know, it's the video. Submit the video evidence. No, that's AI. No, it's not. It's real. No, it's not. You know, that's not me. You know, I was never in such and such a, you know, it's going to be fucking Pandora's box for shit that you can.
Well, they're already doing that. They have this program now that they could take your voice. They could take your face and they can make an AI and have it write a song and have you perform it with your voice.
Oh yeah. They're trying to figure out if you should be able to sue them for that.
Oh, is that where it's at now?
Yeah, that's where it's at now. They're trying to figure out if like, let's say you told ChatGTP, write a song using Springsteen's voice and have him sing it. Yeah. And then it comes out with a song, you know, Springsteen, I think, should be able to sue him. But it's just crazy stuff. There's so many things going on. Our world is like really gone to shit, you know? I mean, all these wacky scientific things that they're doing, they're just not good.
There's a flip side to everything, man. So everything that, you know, you think is good, and there, you know, I mean, there are good things about technology, obviously, yeah. But with that comes...
with great power comes great responsibility.
Yep.
Spider-Man. And
was that Spider-Man?
Yeah, that's Spider-Man. But, you know, it's so true. You know, I mean, if you can do all this crazy stuff, you know, you got to be accountable for it.
I think AI is just the final step of the end of creativity. I mean, think about creativity with music, you know, playing your own instrument, writing your own stuff.
Yeah.
It went to hiring 10 writers to write you a song. It went to autocorrection. It went to, you know, nothing's real.
And John Lennon said that like 60 years ago.
Yeah. And this is just, I mean, this AI is just really the next step. You know, did you really write it?
Well, I mean, John, to answer, I mean, I do have something coming out in the fall.
Ooh.
That it's kind of editing now. And I do have I've got a 2-year project that I'm trying to get out by the end of 2024, which is most likely not going to happen. It's most likely going to be 2025. And it's the biggest thing I ever did. And if I'm ever going to have a magnum opus in my lifetime in my creative work, as I push my mid-50s, the thing I'm working on over the next 2 years is that project, man. So... I'm not talking about it, the details of that yet, but before that, there will be a book coming out this fall. It's just much smaller, but it's something that I'm putting out. The big project is, like I said, will be the next 2 years, but I'm already a year into it.
It has to do with writing.
Well, yeah, it is. It's a
fiction,
book.
Nonfiction.
They're both books. The one is, well, they're both nonfiction.
Okay.
Yeah. One is much smaller. Like I said, that'll be out in the fall. And something much bigger than it involves like a lot of interviews, and you know, it's massive.
That's great.
It's massive.
Now, is that one that you would consider going for a publisher, trying to get that published?
I'll eventually put it out myself if I have to, but yeah, I'm definitely going for a real publisher on this one. Because if I have a shot at selling anything, man, this is the one.
Great. If you make it, when you do book signings, I'll bring a rail ticket.
Absolutely. You value your life, you won't sign one of those rail tickets.
You want to sign a rail ticket? I did used to hear you say that. I have heard you say that, Greg.
Oh, yeah, all the time, John, when he pissed me off.
Mike, forget about England. Where you want to go is Greenland.
Have you been there, man? Or have you gotten stuck there? Because the airplane was rerouted?
I'm dying to go there. No, actually, Iceland. Anyway, what it is the hot springs there. I heard it's absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I've been really trying to get my butt in gear and go over there. My biggest problem right now is I got to get a passport because my passport's I got to get it renewed.
Yeah, I'll tell you one of the trips that I would like to do, because I mean Chris is coming back to America in June or July, but one of the trips that he takes when he goes and he stays in Greece.
Yeah,
he might take his van and drive from Greece through Europe, get on the ferry with his boat over to England.
Greg, are you on bouncing. A hobby horse?
He's like this.
Is it
going, Greg?
You guys are insane. Absolutely not.
Greg, can you see yourself?
What's going on? All right. This isn't funny anymore.
I think it's funny.
Oh, it's hilarious. What are you kidding? I'm going to make a video of you bouncing around in front of England. You look like you're on a freaking hobby horse or something in front of the Eiffel Tower over there or some shit. Anyway, that was quite entertaining, Greg. Quite entertaining.
Yeah, I thought so when I finally caught on to what you guys were talking about.
If this was a video podcast, that would be the trailer.
Yeah.
Greg bouncing. That would be part of the 30-second trailer. This week on Rock Under Fire.
This week, bouncing Greg. With Greg.
Bouncing over London.
Mm-hmm. Greg, you really couldn't tell?
No, I wasn't looking at that. I wasn't bouncing, and I wasn't looking at the screen.
But did you see yourself bouncing?
What's your camera mounted on?
A screen. When the screen was moving and it was bouncing, but I wasn't looking at it. Then when I looked at it, I saw the little corner.
What's like if you remove that screen? What's really behind you? Just house stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what the dirty little secret is, Mike? A good friend of Greg's. Sent him over a whole setup similar to what I'm using. Okay. And Greg just hasn't gotten around to setting it up. So it is what it is.
I'm glad I see that though, man, because I always wondered about like backgrounds.
Yeah.
You know,
a green screen is actually real easy to do. The hard part of the green screen is to make sure that the lighting is, what do you call it? It's the same all over. And then you won't fade in and out. I did a couple of things with it. It's a lot of fun, you know. And honestly, for the most part, Greg, that your whole scene there really looks pretty cool.
I like it.
Yeah, me too.
You know, after our first podcast that we did, and we experimented with the video part of it.
Yeah.
You know, now when you watch TV, you know, even some newscasts, they're really not doing much more than what we did.
No, no, they're not. Not at all.
Where are you with your decision on, you know, you said you wanted to listen to the podcast at the, you know, the last episode, and you were getting ideas to do your own thing. And then you're like, well, now that I heard my voice, I don't know about this, you know, because you got kind of weirded out by hearing your own voice. Where are you with that now? Have you gotten used to it, or were you kidding, or are you just
no? Well,
okay, with
in doing this, hey, it's fine. But if I had to go back and edit, it would be tough.
Editing, I hate it. This is why, like, I'm afraid to listen to this now, you know, because I know a lot of it is like, I don't answer
a lot of
questions,
work.
Man. Like, I'm not good on the spot when people ask me questions. So, like, right off the, like, you know, like, whoa, you know, I just kind of shut down, and I go into my natural speaking mode again, which is like every other word is man, or you know, or and it's just like a lot of those little vocal habits that I think we all have some of them, but I have a lot that I'm aware of. So when I'm editing, I tend to edit myself a lot.
Well,
and I always wonder if the guest, if the other person that does the podcast with me, if when I release the episode, when they listen to it, if they're not saying, oh, fuck, I wish he would have cut when I said that, or I wish he would have cut all of the ums from me, you know, and this and that. Or if people don't care. I wonder if most people don't care when they're on the air and they have to hear their voice back, or do they just do it so much that they just go home and, okay, that was yesterday, I didn't listen to it.
Well, I tell you, Mike, here's a couple of things. Thing number one, as far as my voice goes, I hate it. I don't.
You've got a good voice, though. You've got a good radio voice, podcast voice, whatever it is. You've got a good voice singing and speaking.
Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate that. And I think you do, too. I think as far as your singing voice goes, I think you got a lot of potential there if you ever want to go back to playing in a band.
You've got a deep bass to your voice, though, man. You've got a complete full voice. My voice, when I hear it, is like trebly. It's thin. There's no bottom to my voice. You know what I mean?
You know what?
It irks me, man. It's like, fuck, I hate that.
Here's the trick. I'll be quite honest with you. When I listen to my voice inside, coming from the inside out, I hear it that way too. I hear it trebly. I hear it. I hear every irritating thing about it. And your voice probably sounds better to me than it does to you. And another thing, and I don't mean to keep complimenting people, but Greg, I think you come across very, very good and very authoritative. Also, you should think about doing a podcast.
I think you guys should do a podcast because, you know, I like the idea that Greg said something. I don't remember the exact words, so I can't quote Greg directly, but it was something that you guys were talking about or thinking about doing, either a channel or something in the future. And that he was like, again, you're like, when I listen to the playback, I'll see if I like my voice or not. Like Greg said something to that effect. And but I think you guys, with me winding down this podcast in about a month, you guys have that dynamic, man. You guys have that.
Well, I think when we were talking about it, we had a good idea. I mean, I just can't remember what that idea was at the time, but I do remember talking about it. And I thought that it might be something that would work and would be enjoyable to do. And it would be interesting for anybody that would want to take the ride and listen.
You guys should have your own show, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'll be quite honest with you. I would love to do that. And I'll tell you what, Mike, I'm going to make you this promise. If Greg and I do come out with our own show, you're going to be a guest, and you know, we're going to take you along for the ride too. But you know, it's been great talking to you, and honestly, you know, I have a good time when we used to go to the, getting back to the Liberty. You know, I always had a good time there. Everybody there was like friendly. I'm not talking about the owners or the DJs or anybody, but just our friends.
Just the people,
we had a really
man.
Good group of people. It was yeah. really nice. Even though I wasn't from the neighborhood, I felt like I was, you know, that's, it was like, I would say Ford's version of Cheers, you know, I mean, it was pretty cool. And I'm really pleased and happy that I had the opportunity to meet so many nice people. There are some jerks too, but you know, and for the most part, a lot of nice people, you know, and you being one of them. So
it's yeah, I'm going to miss a lot of, thanks, man. Again, you not being part of Ford's or whatever, man, I always assumed you were. So it's like, you're somebody from Ford's that I never knew, but I've always seen you there. You're always one of the faces. I may not have known your name,
yeah,
but I knew your face for a long time. So, you know, you're always one of the guys sitting on the other side of the bar, you know, and who sang really good.
I think that's all I got.
I think a lot of editing would probably be a good thing.